You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Burnaby.
Rowan here from CFUV 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Lekwungen and Wasinich peoples, now known as Victoria. We handle syndication of Canada Land each week to campus and community radio stations across the country. In today's episode of Canada Land, Jesse Brown interviews the Israeli ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed. In response to the posted interview, Canada Land journalists Cherise Souterin and Noor Azria put forward a written analysis, providing, quote, a critical response to points and arguments which they believed lacked context, were unsupported by facts, or were false, end quote. Their analysis is presented on the Canada Land website and is included in the episode's show notes as, quote, further context and a fact check on what Ambassador Moed said in this interview, end quote. In order to present Cherise Souterin and Noor Azria's analysis alongside today's episode of Canada Land, we have inserted their responses read verbatim within the episode. To hear the original interview in full, please visit CanadaLand.com. Here's the episode.
Quick note that the following episode of Canada Land may contain subject matter and language that some people will find offensive.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today, October 7th, we're talking to Canada's ally, Israel. You say that Israel relies on the support of Canadians and Canadian Jews specifically. Is that support a blank check?
Never a blank check.
Wait for that. Today's show is about what happened 1 year ago on October 7th. And it's about everything that's happened since. But I think that the right place to start today is with something that I said 10 years ago. Almost 10 years ago, exactly. We posted an episode called Why I Hate Talking About Israel. Here's a bit of what I said back then on October 19th, 2014. I did not want to do a show about Israel. I just didn't see the point. I have been talking with people about Israel my whole life, and I don't know to what end. I have never engaged in a conversation about Israel where anyone has convinced the other person of anything. Feelings get hurt, tempers flare, it gets really raw, all of which I'm okay with, but to what end? There is just so much that could go wrong. There's so many of you who could be offended. It's almost like I'm not doing my job if some of you aren't offended or if I don't offend people on both sides of this. And I have no idea what's to be gained. I don't know how we can make progress on this. I don't know what the Canada Land podcast is going to offer to the Mideast conflict that is going to push the ball forward a fraction of a centimeter.
Well, that holds up pretty well. I heeded my own advice for the next 9 years. After that episode, I touched on the topic of Israel-Palestine very rarely and only in circumstances where it seemed clear to me that we had to, that we couldn't really cover what was happening in Canada without covering what was happening in the Middle East. And even then, I tried to limit myself to talking only about the impacts here for the reasons that 2014 Jesse explained to you so breathlessly just a moment ago. And that's how it went for about 9 years. And then a year ago today came October 7th. And ever since then, not talking about Israel has been impossible. The impacts on Canadians every day have been drastic. And still, I thought, you know, if I just stick to those impacts, if I talk about our media and Canadian universities and our streets and not who is right or wrong over there, because who cares what I have to say about that? Well, I thought if I just do my job as the host of Canada Land and just talk about that, well, maybe then everything would be okay. But no. Everything that 2014 Jesse predicted would happen has happened. Feelings have been hurt. Tempers have flared. It has gotten really raw. I have offended people on all sides of these issues, and I've taken losses. We've taken losses. We've lost supporters and colleagues. We've lost relationships. We've lost friends. And we're not through it all yet. It's all still happening. I think that maybe war just does not tolerate neutrality. War demands that you pick a side. It sucks everything and everyone into a brutal binary. You must denounce Hamas. You must agree it's a genocide. You must pick a side. Maybe that's just how war works. Here's another clip from the past, from the first podcast that we put out after October 7th. Still just processing everything that was going on at the time. At the time, I still hoped that my cousin's cousin, the peace activist, Vivian Silver, I hoped that she might still be alive. I was hoping that she was among one of Hamas's hostages. We now know that Vivian Silver was killed by Hamas at Kibbutz Be'eri, where she lived, on October 7th. I spoke with my colleague Emily Nicolas on that episode. We banished from our brains. Emily, like, I think that Israel should exist, and I think that Palestine should be free. And if I'm going to fight for anything, it's the right to think both of those things.
Mm.
I'm going to protect my right to value human life on either side of that fence. And that's not both sides-ism.
No, because you can say that either you're with us or you are with the terrorists. And we know where that leads. And it scares me because the ability to hold different things to be true at the same time and to hold different peoples in your heart at the same time, I feel like the space in our hearts has just been shrinking. And our ability to understand complexity has just been shrinking, probably because we're exhausted, but it's definitely not there for a lot of people.
It's the only thing we can do. Well, that one does not hold up as well as the first clip. Because when it's war, it's war. And even if you don't pick a side, people will put you on one. I've spent the last year talking about what's been happening in Canada, largely about what's been happening to Jews in Canada. And because of that, people have put me on a side. They have assumed that I'm on a side. But they're actually not the ones that I'm talking about today. Because there's somebody else who I think may have assumed that I have taken a side. Israel. I think that Israel may have thought that. Or at least the Israeli embassy in Ottawa. I think perhaps they have made that assumption. What am I talking about? Last month, out of the blue, I got an email from the Israeli embassy in Ottawa. This is what they wrote. They told me that they were contacting me to request a meeting between me and Israel's ambassador to Canada, His Excellency Ido Moed. He would welcome an opportunity to meet with you, they wrote, and discuss the rising anti-Semitism in Canada and the current situation in the Middle East. The relationship between the progressive community in Canada and the Jewish community is extremely important to us. We would welcome a chance to meet with you to discuss these topics as well as other possible areas of collaboration. I responded. I told them I would be very glad to meet Ambassador Moed for a recorded interview. And Israel agreed. And so, last week, I drove to Ottawa because, as much as I hate talking about Israel, it's rare to get a chance to talk to Israel. Wait for it. Hello, Mr. Ambassador.
Hello.
Let's talk about the protests here in Canada. Ostensibly, these began as anti-war protests, ceasefire protests, peace protests. What we hear now at just about every demonstration or march are calls for Palestine to be Arab from water to water, or calls for Jews to go back to Europe, or chants that Israel will soon be gone. So this has become, to a wide degree, an eliminationist movement.
Response from Noor Ezria and Cherise Suturin. This suggests the protests have taken a turn from focusing on peace to focusing on the elimination of Israel and or the removal of Jews. While it is true that calls for removal of Jews from the region have been documented at public demonstrations, there is no evidence to suggest this is the focus of the wider movement or representative of participants' views. Further, some of the core organizers of pro-Palestine demonstrations have notably been found to have no association with these calls. For example, the injunction ruling on the University of Toronto encampment makes clear that there wasn't a connection between movement organizers and calls for violence or anti-Semitic action. Quote, although there have clearly been instances of anti-Semitic hate speech outside of the encampment, there is no evidence that the named respondents or encampment occupants are associated with any of those instances, end quote. The phrase, from water to water, Palestine will be Arab, is also not necessarily eliminationist. Elliot Kola, a professor of Arabic and Islamic studies at Georgetown University, wrote, quote, it is true that a state of Palestine would entail the end of Israel as a Jewish ethnic national state. But as many Palestinian and Israeli intellectuals and others have noted, replacing Israel with a Palestinian state need not result in genocide or the ethnic cleansing of Jews. Proponents of the one-state solution, for instance, have thought a lot about such a future and have developed various scenarios for securing a vibrant Jewish presence alongside a vibrant Palestinian one in various versions of a future Palestine, from a binational secular polity to a federation.
I can't think of anything else like it. We have protests in Canada against Russia. People angrily protest China. They protest Iran. But I don't hear chants at those protests for those countries to be wiped off the map. My question for you is, it is a part of your job here to tell people Israel's side of the story. It's not going very well, is it?
What we are seeing here right now is a sort of a reaction to a campaign of misinformation and disinformation, of Israel being called racist and supremacist and all this, and colonialist, which is, of course, abhorrent. It's ridiculous.
Response from Noor Ezria and Cherise Suturin. Disinformation and misinformation campaigns have been omnipresent throughout this war. Government officials and researchers have said the problem is larger than anything seen before. According to materials seen by the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, quote, Russia has renewed its disinformation efforts in recent weeks, publishing a number of falsified reports about the war between Israel and Hamas, unquote. Russia, China, and Iran have allegedly conducted such campaigns. Haaretz also alleged a branch of the Israeli state hired a private firm that conducted an operation intending to, quote, promote content that is pro-Israel, anti-Palestinian, and anti-Muslim content, as well as disinformation about anti-Semitism on American campuses, unquote. Quote, the federal government says it has raised concerns directly with Israel over allegations of a quote-unquote coordinated and quote-unquote Islamophobic misinformation campaign that targeted Canadians online, unquote. According to the Toronto Star, Israel rejected the claim.
But the fact that people are walking the streets, some of them are Canadians who grew up here, who are tolerant, who are respectful of the law and all of that, and find it easy to say from the river to the sea without understanding what it really means, that's the issue that boggles my mind. Because I'm asking myself, how can you chant things in the street when you have no idea what you're talking about? If you ask them what river and what sea, or what does liberation mean, or how can you reconcile rape with revolution, and they'll be perplexed. But that question is not often asked. So I'm asking myself, this big silent majority of Canadians who are out there, who, you know, they go about their own lives and they don't really bother themselves too much with what's going on. And they see the numbers of people being killed in Gaza and they see the images that are presented to them by the media. I see those people saying, well, this has to stop. And I understand that. Of course, we would like it to stop as well. No more killings, no more destruction. But the point is that we can't really stop unless we get our hostages back and Hamas is no longer a threat to us, or Hezbollah, or Iran.
Response from Noor Ezria and Cherise Suturin. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has rejected multiple offers for hostage release and ceasefire, except one ceasefire which lasted for 4 days on November 22, 2023. On June 4, 2024, Netanyahu rejected another hostage ceasefire deal, which Israel proposed the week earlier. A Times of Israel article reads, quote, the main point of contention in previous rounds has been Israel's insistence on being able to resume the fighting after hostages are released, and Hamas's refusal to free those it abducted unless Israel commits upfront to a permanent ceasefire, unquote. Other Israeli media suggest that PM Netanyahu and his government are avoiding ceasefire talks that would return hostages.
It's as if Israel started October 7th war, as if Israel decided to go into Gaza and to do whatever it does. And this is lopsided, and much of that has become very, very popular among many people. My dilemma is, or my challenge is actually, is to bring people to understand that we have to fight. There is no other way.
I don't know that this argument is getting across to Canadians. There is polling to indicate that 45% of Canadians agree with the notion that Israel is committing genocide. And that's up from 43% just a couple months before that. The longer this goes on, it does seem that Canadians are turning in large numbers against Israel. And this is the public relations effort that your office is involved in. So I say again, it does not seem to be going very well.
So I would again disagree on that, because I think that when people are asked questions, you know, they are asked specific questions in a specific context. That can be genocide. All that, we've heard it before. These are claims that are based on information and disinformation that's been spread out by Hamas itself, the Ministry of Health, so-called, is Hamas organization. So when they give out numbers, you never know how much of them are terrorists.
Response from Noor Ezria and Cherise Suturin. The number of Hamas fighters that have been killed out of the overall death toll in Gaza is debated on both sides. In February 2024, the BBC reported that the IDF's numbers have been called into question through examination of demographic data from Gaza, which shows a large proportion of women and children killed. Quote, "So with the figures suggesting less than 30% of those killed were men, some of whom are likely to be over fighting age, experts have raised questions about how Israel arrived at its claim of killing 10,000 fighters." End quote. Further, the World Health Organization has backed Gaza's Ministry of Health numbers, indicating the total death toll.
We'll not deny that civilians are dying. Families are dying. Babies are dying. Livelihoods are being destroyed. We know that. But at the same time, those same people will live side by side with us forever because they are our neighbors.
Response from Noor Ezria and Cherise Suturin. In a September 2nd news conference, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu outlined his post-war strategy, which, according to an Al Jazeera explainer, involves keeping the area north of a military axis through the Netzarim corridor under Gaza City in a state of destruction. The plan would prevent reconstruction efforts and prohibit displaced Palestinians from returning to their homes. Al Jazeera said Netanyahu's presentation appeared to ignore the occupied West Bank entirely, showing it fully annexed into Israel on the map he referenced during the briefing.
It is hard for the broader public to make a distinction between who is a terrorist, who is a civilian, and how successful Israel's operation is. But we have to fight because Hamas doesn't leave us any choice.
You know that anti-Semitism in Canada has surged to historic highs since October 7th. Things that I never thought I would see. Gunshots at synagogues, Molotov cocktails, bomb threats, bomb plots. The violence is not always symbolic. Here in Ottawa, there was a terrorist plot against the Jews of Ottawa, a bomb plot. There are lines that are being crossed, angry people chanting outside of the holiest places, the most private places. When you bring this up, when you push back against this, these obvious acts of anti-Semitism, what you are invariably told is, this isn't about Jews. Our target is not Jews. Don't try to conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. Do not use a charge of racism as a shield. This isn't about you, is what the Jews of Canada are told. This is about Israel. Mr. Ambassador, it might not be fair that Jews in Canada and in the United States and all around the world, it might not be fair that Jews outside of Israel are blamed for what Israel does. But it is true the Jews are blamed for what Israel does. Does Israel take any responsibility for that?
What I'm hearing very often, by the way, is not what you just said. This is not about you, it's about Israel. I'm hearing more often than not, this is not Canada. So when O Canada is being played at the flag-raising ceremony and people are singing, those anti-Israel protesters continue to wave their flags and chant from the river to the sea, I see that this is exactly what I'm told. This is not Canada. They are not Canadians. So there is a very clear distinction that needs to be made between those groups who hide themselves behind masks and go to the JCC old age home here in Ottawa and shout at those people, go back to your homes, Holocaust survivors and whoever else is there, have nothing to do with Israel. We have to understand who these people are. Where do they come from? Why are they there? What is their motivation? This is not pro-Palestinian, the fact that they are carrying the flags. They are actually out there to change something very fundamental and significant in Canada and in Western society. And this is the point. When it comes to attacking Jewish businesses, when it comes to encampments and universities, and it's about disallowing Jewish students from entering campuses.
Response from Noor Azria and Cherise Sutrin. While we could not find verified reports of Jewish students being barred from entering campuses, there have been incidents in which pro-Palestine protesters have blocked access to classrooms associated with engineering, education, and other topics, quote, perceived to be connected to Israel, end quote.
This is about actually changing civilization. Universities have a critical role in developing our knowledge base, our curiosity, our science and technology, our prosperity. And when they attack it and they want to instill their agenda on the university, to force themselves on the university, they call it divestment. There is something very fundamental.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't mean to be rude. I'm not sure you're answering the question. It is a fact that this is harming Jews in Canada. Does Israel take responsibility for that to any degree? Are you here merely to represent Israel, or is anti-Semitism in Canada a priority or something you're involved
in? It's a very high priority, and it's on top of my discussions with any official here in Canada. And it's not for me to take responsibility for a phenomenon that's inflicted by somebody else, but I do stand up and say to all Jews and non-Jews, stand up, speak up, fight against this, because this is indeed something that does not belong here. This is something that hurts our society. It also hurts our relations.
You cannot take responsibility for the actions of people who are throwing bricks and firing guns. That is understandable. But there are things that happen in Israel that Israel is responsible for that affect this. This is a bit of a complicated question, but I want to ask you about a letter that was sent by the head of the Shin Bet, Israel's security agency, Ronen Bar. It's a letter sent to Prime Minister Netanyahu and members of the cabinet. And it was a letter about Jewish terrorism. Those are his words. He called it Jewish terrorism in the West Bank. And what he said was that nothing is being done to stop this. Nothing is being done to stop the settler violence in the West Bank. And he wrote to the Prime Minister that if no action is taken, this violence will lead to global delegitimization and much bloodshed, and will be a great stain on Judaism and on all of us. He did not say this would be a great stain on the Israeli military or the Israeli government or Israelis. He said that if we don't do something to stop Jewish terrorism, this will be a stain on Jews around the world. As far as I can tell, the Prime Minister did not heed this warning, and nothing has been done to stop the violence, as far as I can tell, which the Israeli military itself, one act of violence in the West Bank, the Israeli military itself called it a pogrom. So, according to your own head of security, the head of the Shin Bet, Israel is delegitimizing Jews around the world and staining the reputation of Jews. And yet, here you are telling me that anti-Semitism in Canada is something that you stand against and are doing everything you can to stop. Is that not a contradiction?
I fail to see a contradiction here. I fail to see the relationship between those two. But let's talk about what's going on in Israel and the West Bank and the letter by Ronen Bar. Ronen Bar didn't write it on a personal note. He wrote it professionally because Israel's security organization has been following what's going on the West Bank from the Jewish side because it's a source of threat. So you're not aware, but I can provide you information about what actions, legal actions were taken against all these extremists and suspected terrorists, whether it's administrative detention and the other steps that they've been taking against them to make sure that they will not be able to pursue any plans that they may have.
You're saying that there is a police response to the Jewish terrorists?
Yes, of course.
To the Hilltop? If
police, military, security agencies.
Because it's recently been reported that you can't even make a 911 call in the West Bank right now, that no one will respond.
The Israeli security forces, whether it's the military, the police, or the intelligence organizations, are on top of that all the time. whether sufficient action has been taken. That's, you know, that's something that you have to see a case by case, but let's be very clear here.
I mean, it wasn't looked at case by case. It was looked at historically by a journalist who said that there
is a
system within Israel to ignore these things.
Israel is a democracy, a very strong and solid democracy. And from the president to the prime minister to the government, everybody have condemned this very clearly. Any kind of action, any violent action, not just terrorism, which is the worst part, but any kind of action that was taken by those extremists was condemned, and police is acting on it. You can say it's not enough. You can say that there are some opinions that dissent from it, and publishing a letter, that's one of the ways to publish
a letter from the Shin Bet.
Okay, that's
fine. It's not the only one. I'll give you another example here, but if that one didn't make the point.
No, it made I want you to listen to my point.
Okay.
And my point being that Israel is a democracy. And Israel has all the tools to handle these issues and these cases. And when there is criticism about Israel on that, it's fair, it's fine, I can provide you with information to contradict that, and you may still hold your opinion, and that is fine. But
I'm not presenting you my opinion. I'm presenting you the opinion of the head of the Shin Bet.
We have to remember one thing, that in this open society that Israel is, we have some opinions, we have some people who go, who cross the line, who are criminals, who are terrorists, and do things that they shouldn't be doing. But we are aware, and we have the legislation, and we have the tools to combat that and to make sure that those people are not able to execute their plans.
I'm sorry, I have to challenge the notion that this is just a criminal element. It's not just the Shin Bet. The Israeli military has warned the Israeli government that policy in the West Bank is driving Palestinians towards a third intifada. This was the military itself saying, if we keep the economic sanctions up, if we do not let them come work, if there are raids every night, if there are pogroms, please let me finish.
I'll tell
you. This is the military warning your government.
I hear you.
I want to tell you why this relates to me and why this relates to Canada.
Go ahead.
It's the broader point that I want to ask you about, because this is a warning from the military that Palestinians are being driven towards intifada. What does the Israeli government do amid that warning? Minister Ben-Gvir visits one of the holiest sites in Islam, the Temple Mount, and leads Jewish prayers. This is not subtle. This is a provocation. This is daring Palestinians towards intifada. I walk down the street and I hear protesters in Toronto saying, globalize the intifada. Globalize the intifada. Mr. Ambassador, there's every reason to believe that if Israel does push the Palestinians towards a third intifada, it will not just be Israelis who are targeted. It will be Canadians as well. Jews around the world, non-Jews around the world, will die if this intifada is declared. Why is the Israeli government ignoring warnings from its own military? It does seem as if the government is pedal to the metal pushing towards conflict in the West Bank, pushing towards intifada. Why would we support that?
You have to understand one thing. Israel is fighting a war right now. On the people on the West Bank, 60 to 70% of them support Hamas. I don't think that you'll mention that. I don't think that you'll mention that the Palestinian Authority, which was through agreement between Israel and them, were responsible for security, are able to mitigate the flow of arms and bombs coming in from Iran into the West Bank. They are not acting on it. We know that the city of Tul Karem, of Jenin, of Nablus are centers for terrorist organizations that have been shooting mortars into Israel. I don't think that anybody reports that, anybody knows about that.
Response from Nur Azria and Shariz Sutrin. There have been no reports about mortar or rocket attacks originating from the cities of Tul Karem, Jenin, Nablus, or any of the West Bank, though it is possible that Moed is privy to information that has not been available to the public. There were failed attempts to fire rockets into Israel from Jenin in 2023. However, Israel has maintained settlements in the West Bank, which has been deemed illegal in a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention by many countries, including Canada. According to Al Jazeera, quote, activists and experts believe that Israel is playing up to the threat of what it calls, quote-unquote, terrorism, to justify increasing violence, which leads to mass displacement and the expansion of illegal settlements, end quote.
Nobody thinks about them shooting directly into Israeli villages. Nobody would know about that, shooting into a girl's sleeping room.